I'm doing a podcast. I decided to do it because I talk about traveling a lot and I often get little itches to travel again. And when I talk about it, a story always comes up of a past trip I've done, and I realize sometimes that I've never told that story before, or I've only told parts of it. And who really inspired me to, wow, inspired, that's a little much. It sounds like some great feat. Someone that I would think of every time I would tell these stories that I knew would be happy I was telling them was my Aunt Kathy, my mom's aunt, and she is my Nana's sister. And whenever I came home from a trip, usually at Christmas time was when I got to spend the most time with her, she would always want to sit down and ask me questions about everywhere that I had been. It was kind of different with my Nana and Papa, or my mom and dad, or my best friends from home, because I was able to keep in touch with them better than I was with my Aunt Kathy. So they had heard little stories throughout the course of my trip that I had updated them on each city that I went to. I'd tell them a little snippet, but obviously there's way too much in each visit to tell over the phone in a conversation, so I would miss a lot. But during these trips, I kept very detailed journals, which I still have, which are kind of like my most prized possession of the trips that I've been on. So what I decided to do was to create this podcast so that I could kind of share the stories that I hadn't got a chance to before, and in a way where friends and family all over Canada could kind of tune in and listen when I updated one. So I decided to start from the very beginning, which would be in June 2010, when I was about to embark on my very first trip. My mom and dad had always encouraged me to go traveling. I don't really know why, what it stemmed from. I know that they never got a chance to go backpacking or go adventuring over the world when they were younger. So maybe it's, I don't know, a little dream they had that they kind of wanted me to do, or to see what it was like, kind of thing. So they had always encouraged me to save money and told me that, like, maybe after high school, that's when you can go travel. And 2006 rolled around, I graduated from high school, and there was no way that I wanted to go backpacking then, because even though I knew I wanted to, I knew that travel was definitely something on my bucket list that I wanted to do, and sooner rather than later. But I knew that if I went after high school, I would never want to go back to university. I would want to just keep traveling, which in retrospect I think was kind of true. But I also kind of I don't regret waiting till after university to travel, but I know that my life would be very different if I had gone traveling after high school, because I think you just gain so much more of a perspective, and gather so many different outlooks on life from the people that you meet when you're traveling and hear about their experiences and what they got up to. And I met so many people who had done a gap year. It's not really a common thing to do in Canada or America, but people that I met from the rest of the world, even like the Pacific, I'm not so sure of in Asia, but definitely in Australia, New Zealand, and all over Europe. When you graduate high school, most people take a year off to go volunteer for the year, go travel for the year, get a job for the year. Most people take a break after they graduate high school, and that's just not as common in North America. And I really wish it was, because I think a lot of people would have a different path after that year. I don't think they would probably go into the same field that they choose to right out of high school, or they might postpone it a few more years after that to kind of figure out what they really do want to do before they spend all that money on tuition. Obviously, I don't regret what I did, because I got to have all these awesome travel experiences that I will now tell you about. But I definitely know that if I had gone after high school, things would have turned out a little different, I think. So what I did end up doing was I graduated in 2010 from Acadia, University of Nova Scotia, and I had saved up a lot of money. I'm very good at saving money. I get it from my mom, I think. When I was little, my Papa Joe, every time I visited, would give me a loonie or a toonie, and I remember saving them. I didn't really spend them on anything. I kept them in a big jar, and sometimes my mom would deposit them into a bank account that they had started for me. And same with my dad's Dad, my grandpa Stuart, he would always give me a loonie or toonie a day when he came to visit or when I visited him, and I would save those up too. I always babysat when I was younger, so I saved money from that. And my parents didn't like they would buy me stuff if I needed it, but I remember that I had an allowance. I think it was $20 a month or $20 every 2 weeks, something like that. I had other friends whose parents would pay if they wanted to go to the movies. They would just give them money for the movies, but I used my savings from my allowance. So I think that kind of was a good way to go about it because then I was the one in control of what I could do, what and knew how much I had to spend on stuff, so I could prioritize that type of thing. So I think those were good lessons to start me off with while I was younger. And that helped me kind of budget, I think, in the long term. So when I was in university, I really lucked out because my mom worked at or still works at a in a building on campus, and they needed somebody to man this cafe that they were just starting. So I was the first person kind of that worked there when it was just very much in the beginning stages, which was a perfect opportunity because I got to be with it as it grew and they kind of figured out what they actually wanted to do with it all 4 years through university. So it could not have been a better job. I was able to work on my laptop, do projects if it was slow. It was right on campus, so I didn't have to travel far, and it was decent money for what I was doing. So it was great. So I was able to save a lot of that because I lived at home throughout university. So, and my mom worked on campus, like I mentioned, so I got half off tuition. So I was very, very fortunate in a lot of those aspects, which helped me to have enough money right out of graduation with no debt to be able to go travel. So I was very, very fortunate for those kind of things. So after graduation, I think I graduated at the end of May, maybe. And I remember it was June 16th, was when I left. And I had no sweet clue what really I was in store for. I knew that I was going on a trip, but I really hadn't planned too much. I had planned the first week, I think. I knew that I wanted to start in Ireland. I didn't know how long my money would last me, so I didn't know if I was going to be there for 2 weeks or 2 months or travel for 2 years. I had no sweet clue. And I'm really glad that I kind of went into it with that mindset of what? I'll see what happens, because that was a mindset that came up so many times, and you had to be on that mindset kind of when you're traveling and you don't have plans and you kind of need to go with the flow. You can't be, well, I guess you can, but it'll just be a very different experience. It's good, I found, to be very kind of loosey-goosey and relaxed about how everything turns out. Glass half full kind of perspective. So I left on June 26th, and all I had planned was I had booked a hostel in Shannon, or no, not Shannon, Ireland. That's where I flew into. I knew I didn't want to start in Dublin. So I started on the west coast of Ireland. I flew into Shannon, Ireland, and then I took a bus from Shannon to Ennis, Ireland. And in Ennis, I had booked a hostel for 3 nights, I believe. And after that, the plan was to bus from Ennis to Galway, stay a night or two in Galway, and then catch a ferry from Galway to a place called the Aran Islands, which I had never heard of before. And kind of, I don't think it was that I wanted to go to the Aran Islands specifically, but I had found a guy on couch surfing who was able to host me on the Aran Islands. Now this brings up a huge part of all of my trips, which is couch surfing. Before I left for my trip, I had done a lot of research. I read travel blogs, all things about hostels. I never watched the movie Hostel. I do not like scary movies, A, and B, it was what something everybody brought up. Oh, have you seen the movie that just came out? No, there was no way in hell I was going to watch that. And to this day, I have not. And I'm still happy about that. But yeah, so I did a bunch of research, and couch surfing kept coming up. And my frugal ways were intrigued by it. Basically, what you do is you go to couchsurfing.org, you create a profile, kind of like Facebook, tell a little bit about yourself, post some photos, and then you can type in where your destination is. So I typed in, probably, I don't know, I probably typed in Ennis, Ireland, or Galway. and this guy probably came up in that search, but you can also, they have discussion forums, so I might have just been looking in the Ireland discussion forum for it. But basically, wherever you're going, say you're going to Paris next weekend, you type in Paris, and everybody's profile pops up that has a free place for you to stay during your period in Paris, which is an amazing concept to me. And it's kind of like pay it forward. So the idea is when you return to your home, you'll still be using Couchsurfing and you can help out other travelers, regardless of if it's hosting them right now. For instance, I live in quite a tiny little apartment. We refer to it as the shoebox. And there is not really anywhere that I would want to host somebody. Our couch is a love seat, which is not suitable for anybody really, to spread out and relax after a long day, a long flight, or a long day walking around the city. Obviously, in a pinch, travelers really don't care. I would definitely take up our little tiny love seat if need be, but the shoebox is quite tiny, so we don't host at the moment. But I still have my profile set, even though I'm not, you can't sleep at my house. I'd be more than happy to meet you at the airport, show you around the city in my free time. So it's really a pay it forward concept, which is really cool. And it's not just for people at a university, it's for any age. So I've stayed with people who are around my mom and dad's age, who were even older, who were retired, and their kids or grandkids were out backpacking as well, and they joined couch surfing because their grandkids had told them about it, and they basically just wanted to open up their home to have another safe place for travelers to stay. Because it is kind of, when you try to explain it to somebody, oh, I went on the internet and I found somebody. Do you know them? No, they're a stranger. And where are you going to stay? Oh, I'm going to stay at their house with a stranger that I've never met before, other than on the internet. So it's really kind of hard to get that point across to your family, and especially to my mom and dad. I was an only, or I am an only child, and they did not love the concept of couch surfing when I first left. So they're very antsy for me to try it out. But what had happened was when I was looking for my first couch surfer in Ireland, there was another girl. Her name was Kara. I believe she was from Michigan. And she was doing a summer abroad in Ireland. And she was looking for somebody to couch surf with, another female preferably, because she had never done it before. And she was kind of, would rather try it out with a friend. So what Kara and I did was we met in Galway and we took the ferry over and we had a place to stay with a guy named Glenn. So Kara and I were both around, she was younger, she was about 18, I think, and I was 22, 21, 22. And Glenn was, I think he was in his mid-30s. So which was a, there's a lot of older, not older, well, I guess, yeah, 30, 35 was older than I was at the time. The average age of the hosts that you that I've received have been single men who live by themselves, 30 and up. And the average couch surfer, I would say, is a young girl. So you have to have like a good head on your shoulders, and be pretty confident. I learned really quick, if you're going to be doing couch surfing solo as a female. With that said, all the men that I stayed with were absolutely amazing. I had maybe one circumstance where I just didn't feel comfortable, but it wasn't because of he made me, it wasn't in a dangerous way. We just didn't get along. And that's over the course of like 3 years traveling all over the world using couch surfing. You have to be really smart about who you pick based on their profile. So I would only pick people if they had lots of positive reviews from other single female travelers and if they had been couch surfing for like hosting for a while. And that's information that you can see when you search a city for hosts. So I would always set my standards pretty high when I was looking for a host. So and that helped, I believe, is what helped me out. Whereas other people don't really have as high of standards when they're hosting. They're mostly just concerned with, ugh, I need a free place to stay this weekend. Who will host me? Whereas I was like, I need a free place to stay this weekend, but I also don't want to die. So I want to have them been a part of couch surfing for at least a year, have at least four positive reviews, have a very full profile, lots of pictures, good communication. So that really helped me out. And Glenn fit all those standards. So Kara and I met in Galway, took the bus or the ferry across to the Aran Islands, and then we walked up to Glenn's place. And how it worked was he worked at a hostel that was located on the Aran Islands, and because he helped manage it, he was able to host couch surfers for free. In his He had like a little cabin just off of the hostel, so we stayed there for a couple of nights because the hostel was full. And then when it freed up, he gave Kara and I a room in the hostel for free, which was really nice. And after my first experience couch surfing with Glenn and telling my parents how it went, they instantly became very big fans of couch surfing. And the reasoning was couch surfing versus staying in a hostel. Like, hostels are great, don't get me wrong, but when you stay at a hostel, or when I've stayed at a hostel, you go in, you check in, you go to usually a dorm style room, lots of beds, bunk beds often, and you kind of have to stash your luggage somewhere. Sometimes they have lockers that you can put it in, and then you have to go back and forth from the locker to get your stuff. Sometimes there's a curfew on the door. If there's not, you have to have a passcode to get in or a key. You have to have the number of the hostel in case you get lost, or the address. With couch surfing, it's literally like you have a friend in that city or town that you're visiting. So if I got lost, I had somebody to call. I could call Glenn and be like, "Glenn, I'm on this road. Where do I turn?" I didn't have to worry about locking up my luggage because it was in his house. It was Other than worrying about Glenn himself, which I didn't really feel like I needed to because I had done my due diligence looking for hosts that kind of met my requirements. So I didn't have to worry about, like, if I needed a shower, I have to go down the stairs to the locker, unlock my bag, root for my shampoo and clean clothes, lock it up, go to the shower, come back, put my towel back in the locker, my dirty clothes in the locker. Like, I didn't have to worry about that kind of stuff. But most importantly for me, couch surfing, you got to meet a local, somebody who was there. I didn't have to read through a guidebook to find out a cute little hot spot in the town. I could go with the person who's lived there, and they could show me their favorite places. I could hear their firsthand experiences of growing up there, of moving there themselves, meet their friends. And your trip is just so much more flexible that way, which I really, really liked. As I mentioned earlier, I kind of have a fly by the seat of your pants attitude when it comes to traveling. I don't really like to plan too far in advance because if I meet somebody who is going to their aunt's farm for a week and wants me to come help pick corn with them, I want to be able to say, "Yeah, I don't have any plans. Sure, I can come do that." Like, that's a really random experience to do in a foreign country. I don't want to have to say, "Oh, no, I got to catch my bus here. I'm in Rome for a couple days and then I'm going to fly to Venice and then I have to," like, I don't want to have to, stick to a really rigid schedule. I like the flexibility, so couch surfing is perfect for it. And my parents love that. They like the safety of it. They like that I had somebody who had my back. Whereas at a hostel, you don't really. It's just a building, and you're kind of like a hotel. You're just renting. Whereas couch surfing, you have a new friend in a foreign place that will come help you if you get lost, help you if you get hurt. They know more about you than a hostel would, so they would know who to contact if they need to. It's a safe place for you to sleep, safe place for your luggage. It's just a lot more safe. And so they were huge fans, and they encouraged me to do it for the rest of my travels, which I happily did. So it was a great first experience with Glenn. We ended up extending our stay with him for, I think we were only supposed to stay for 2 days to test out the field for our first couch surfing experience, and it went really, really well. So I think we ended up staying for a week with Glenn before heading back to the mainland, and then I took a bus to Dublin, where my friend, childhood friend Emily, was working for the summer in Dublin, and she had agreed to host me. Her and her boyfriend said I could stay with them for a couple days. So I went and spent Canada Day in Dublin with Emily and her boyfriend Jacob, and it was really, really cool. It was neat to see what they were up to. I didn't do too much exploring in Dublin. I think it was then that I realized, like, I like cities. Obviously, I've been living in Vancouver for almost 3 years now. But for travel purposes, I kind of like to get outside of a city or stay in one tiny area of a city more. Like I'm not a big sightseer. Sometimes I'll find myself going to a very famous place. Like say I went to Pisa and I would not see the Leaning Tower, which is not true. I did go to Pisa and I saw the Leaning Tower, but something like that. If I went to a city that was really known for something, I wouldn't know of, or I wouldn't really care to go see their famous what they're famous for. It's just too touristy, too crowded. I just didn't like it that much. So I'd prefer to stay in smaller spots, which is perfect because there's couch surfers everywhere. So that was kind of my first little stint. That was my first country that I did was Ireland. After Ireland, I had touched base with a friend from university. We actually weren't that close in university, but through the power of Facebook, we both were able to keep in touch and I saw that she was working as an au pair in Italy for the summer, and it seems like you're closer friends when you are in a foreign country. Just anybody kind of from home seems like a good match. So her name was Laura Shelnut, or her name is Laura Shelnut. We had decided to meet up. She knew that I was bopping around Europe at the moment, and so she was like, "Well, why don't you come visit?" The family that I'm working for said I could take a little bit of time off. I'd love to go explore a little bit with you, go outside of the city, take a break from the family kind of thing. And I said, "Sure." So that was my next plan after leaving Ireland. So I think I'll leave this episode on that note. So where I pick up next time will be Italy with Shelnut. and we'll go from there. But just some things to kind of wrap up with. I get a lot of questions about money. How did I know how much money to bring? How did I save it? I already kind of touched on, pardon me, I already kind of touched on how I saved it. I was lucky. I worked through university, stayed at home, and my mom worked at the university, so I only had half tuition, so I didn't have debt, and I was able to save. So I saved about, I think it was in total around just under $10,000, during university. And this isn't just working, like that's including birthday gifts, stuff from grandparents, lots of stuff like that, all was included into that 10,000. And I had not budgeted at all. I literally just bought the plane ticket a couple weeks before the trip, and then booked the hostel and knew I was couch surfing, and that was it. I had got travel insurance, but and like I'd got all my gear, kind of like bought a tent, a backpack, hiking boots. Like I had no idea what to expect. I didn't know how long I'd be going for, what I'd need. I didn't know if I'd be hiking to Everest Base Camp or if I was gonna spend 8 months being a lazy bum in a hostel in Sydney. Like I had no idea what to expect. So $10,000 is what I left with. And as I began the trip and like started to get a couple countries under my belt and kind of saw what it was like, I really started to budget, I would say, more based on my travel style. So I knew I didn't go to places like Scandinavia or Japan because they are more expensive. And I knew that that kind of wasn't the trip that I was on. I was on the see how far I can get with this little money kind of a trip. So even when I was in Switzerland, which is quite expensive, I stayed there for I think a little over 2 weeks, but I was couch surfing the whole time. I didn't stay in a hostel once. And the type of activities that I did, I didn't do any paid activities. And I always got stuff from grocery stores. I think I only ate out a couple times, and that was when I went out to dinner with the couch surfers that I was staying with when they got off work. So that's when I really started to budget, was on the trip, being aware of what's going to cost me more money, and what I can save on. If you're planning a shorter trip and you know I only have a month off work and I want to go do Europe, which I totally get, like some that's what you have as an option sometimes, and you can totally make it work. But in cases like that, yes, I would have had to budget way more if I knew that I had a specific amount of time to fit in certain things. mind you, if you do want to have a more flexible, shorter trip, you can. You just need to be very aware that your budget might go out the window, which is what happened to me last summer. I went on a short trip. I think it was a month and a half, just under a month and a half. I went back to Europe and I didn't have a budget. I didn't really know where I was going or for how long. And I ended up spending way more money than was necessary. So in retrospect, I kind of wish that I had planned it out more. Because if you're going for that short amount of time, you can message Couchsurfers a little bit further in advance. Some don't prefer it, but you can find ones that are okay with it. So I wish that I had planned out where I was going for a shorter trip better. Because kind of flying by the seat of your pants, you have to have the money to be able to do that, which I did. But I would have had more money left over if I had planned. So I guess when it comes to your money, it really depends on what style of a trip you want. If you're having a shorter trip, budget and figure out kind of how much money you'll need. If you're fly by the seat of your pants on a longer trip, I say give yourself between 1,000 and 1,500 a month, unless you're going real rugged, in which you would need under 1,000 or like quite under 1,000, depending on what type of modes of transportation you're going to be using and where you're going to be staying. So there's quite a big range, and it really depends on the style of trip you want, whether you want short and planned. You can do that on a budget. If you want short and fly by the seat of your pants, your budget's going to go out of the window. So yeah, you really need to plan what style of travel you want to do, and then that's when your budget can come into play. Another thing I get asked about is couch surfing. If you think you might want to couch surf on a trip at some point in the future, create your account now. People, when they go and are considering, do I want to host this person or not? They look at my account and they can see that I've been a member since 2010, and they're like, oh, okay, she's been around for a while. They can see all the matches that I've made, all the positive references that I've received. It pays to kind of start early just in case. And there's couch surfing meetings all the time, no matter where you are. Like in Vancouver, they have one a week. I know on the East Coast, it's a little less frequent, maybe one a month, or it might not be a meeting, it might be an event that they go to together. So kind of research a little bit and try to get involved in the community. That's going to really help you out when you need to use couch surfing. And with couch surfing, keep in mind it's not just a free place to stay. A lot of hosts you'll find won't host people for just one night because they find they're getting a lot of people that just need a night before they go catch a flight. Whereas the reason couch surfing started was to meet people from all over the world, gain experiences, meet different cultures, and create a friend base from all over the world. And sadly, now there's a lot of people that are using it like, whoa, why would I stay in a hostel when I can stay with this random person for free? And they kind of just are like, hey, drop off their bags and then go do their own stuff with their own friends. I can see that happening more if you're traveling with a friend or a group of people. Traveling by yourself, obviously, you kind of cling on to that person that's hosting you. Oh, not cling on, but you're very happy that they exist because they're kind of your go-to. Even when I was in Europe last summer, I was traveling with a friend and we did couch surf a couple times. And I think we were pretty good about it. Like it was his first time couch surfing, and he kind of was really digging it, which is good. Like that's what you want, even though there was two of us and it would have been easy for us to go do our own thing and then just come back and crash at the person's house who was hosting us. The people that hosted us were amazing and we wanted to get to know them. So it worked out really, really well for us. And that's kind of what you want to do with couch surfing. It's not just a free place to stay, it's a new friend who's taking time out of their schedule to host a complete stranger. So you really have to acknowledge that. So definitely, if you think you might use couch surfing, sign up now. Even if you can't travel, hosting is great. You get to meet people from all over the world while staying in your own home, and you make a huge change in somebody's trip. Like some of my favorite memories from all of my travels have been how couch surfing has played in. Like I have amazing stories, which you will hear in the following episodes. Couch surfing is just amazing. I can't speak more highly of it. And the last point I'll cover in this episode, for people who are thinking of going traveling. I know my roommate Shannon is planning a big trip, and she knows that she can ask me anything about traveling, and I tell her lots of advice and stuff, but sometimes some things are just missed or I don't put enough emphasis on them. So when she listens to this, she'll be able to kind of hear more and make her list that way. But in terms for research, a lot of people ask me how I prepped. And honestly, like for me, the prep part of a trip is like it's a huge chunk of it for me. Like right now I have a huge travel bug and I'm planning on well, I don't really know when I'm going to leave on the trip, whether it'll be at the end of this year or maybe spring or summer of next year, but I know I have another trip coming up. I don't know where I'm going to go or what I'm going to do, but I know I'm going to I know I'm going on the trip, so that alone is exciting. And the research part of it, enjoy it. Like that's a huge chunk of your trip. So I remember for my first trip when I was leaving university, I remember working at the cafe. I'd be working nights during exams. I think I worked till 11 or midnight. Not midnight, it was probably 11. Some shifts, and I would be on my laptop at the cafe and just Googling everything related to it. I would Google backpack reviews to know what the best backpack for my frame would be, what the price range on it should be. Should I buy used or should I buy new? What's the best website for looking at flight tickets? How far in advance should I buy? Reading people who are travel bloggers. I know one that I read a lot, which I'm not that big of a fan of now, but starting out, it was neat to find like a wealth of information in one spot. Was called Nomadic Matt. He's a guy who's backpacked for years, and has kind of compiled a lot of helpful information for first-time backpackers. So I found his stuff really useful. Learning that Wiki Travel was a thing was really helpful. For those of you who Wiki Travel has just passed your routine up until this point, if you go to Wiki Travel, I don't know if it's .org or .com, but it's like Wikipedia but for destinations. So I would type in Mongolia, and it gives you how to get to Mongolia, plane, train, automobile, and like information on the different ones, how much it should cost you, what route you should take, local customs, local food, best time of year to travel in. So Wiki Travel was huge help for me. I also went to the library a ton. I would re rent so many books. And I would spend like hours and chapters going through their travel section, figuring out what's a good book to buy that will be useful for me while I'm traveling. What I did buy like a first timer guide to Europe. A lot of people get like, what is it, Fromer's Guides or Lonely Planet. I did bring my, was it a Lonely Planet? It was some type of like intro to Europe and like with a little couple pages on each country. I don't know if I would have taken it again. It just like it's extra weight in a huge pack that I had already. But for short trips, I definitely would do it. It would have been way more helpful if I was somebody who wanted to go to a lot of destinations, like different museums or local hotspots. If that was like I had to fit a lot of that in, those kind of books would be helpful to take with me. Yeah, reading lots of people's blogs, like the internet was key. I did so much research. I got like a Hilroy notebook that I had when I was in like grade four, and I got one of those and I just wrote down everything. It was like I was taking another class, another course in university, because I spent so much time researching. I didn't take that notebook with me when I left, but the information that I learned while I was researching, like obviously stuck with me and was really helpful. So I didn't know what I'd need from that information. I didn't know if the stuff I learned on hiking Mount Kilimanjaro would come into play. It obviously didn't. I've never hiked Mount Kilimanjaro. So maybe be a little bit more choosy on what you're researching. But definitely the internet, just Google everything that you think could pop up. There is information on it. For instance, right now, I'm kind of getting inspired by some of my favorite travel books. My favorite travel book, which I encourage everybody to read. It kind of speaks to me. I like the type of travel that they're doing in it. I've made, I think my dad, well, I know my dad has read it, and I think my Papa Joe has, yeah, he has read it. And I'm so happy because I really, really like that book, and I like that they were able to read it and kind of see why I like to travel or what kind of makes me excited about travel. So, Aunt Kathy, if you want to read that book, I'm pretty sure it's still at Nan and Papa's house because I was frantic for a while thinking that I had lost it and forgot that I had loaned it to him. So go pick it up from Papa Joe and you can give it a read. It is called Cycling Home from Siberia. It's written by a guy named Rob Lilwall. And he basically, he was a teacher in England. He was, I think, 26 or 27, around my age, and he got a huge travel itch. And how he solved it was him and a friend of his flew from England. He quit his job as a teacher. He left and he went from London to Magadan, which, if you Google Magadan, you will see that it is in far eastern Russia. It is in Siberia. And they left for Magadan in, I believe it was October, with their bicycles. And their plan was to cycle home from Siberia. So his friend that he was with, Rob's friend, I believe his name was Alistair. Alistair took the most logical route, and he kind of went down out of Siberia, and into Mongolia, and then took a right, and went home the logical way to England. Whereas if you decide to read Rob's book, you will see that it is a little bit too long, for that short of a trip. So what he did was he traveled for the next, I think, almost 3 years, a little over 3 years, and he cycled all the way down through Mongolia, China, Japan, Thailand, the Philippines, all the way around Australia, took a boat back up to India, I believe, and then went through a bunch of the stands and then up through Europe to get back home to England. So you can just imagine the kind of stories that he has to share in that book. It's really well written. And what kind of inspired me to reread that recently was in 2012 or 2011, Rob went on another trip and wrote a book about it, which I have yet to read. So I just ordered it last week. It's called Cycling or Walking Home from Mongolia, in which him and another friend of his, Leon, I believe is his name, Rob and Leon, walk from Ulaanbaatar, which is the, I never know how to pronounce it, Ulaanbaatar or Ulaanbaatar. I'm not really sure. There's a lot of L's, a lot of A's, and it begins with a U. So it's the capital of Mongolia, and they walk from Ulaanbaatar to Hong Kong, and I think it takes them around 6 months, maybe. And I'm just kind of getting inspired by these like expedition type travel stories. I have never done anything like that. Well, no. The only thing that I can semi compare it to is when I was in Mongolia, and Mongolia is very underdeveloped, and very inexpensive in regards to a lot of things, except their tours. They have normal, like, European tour prices, which is very annoying for the budget traveler. So when I got to Mongolia, I could not afford to do the kind of tour that I wanted to, where I could see the Gobi, or I could go northern Mongolia and see the steppe and the mountains, stuff like that. So what I decided to do was I tried to fit a little bit of each in, but using myself as the tour guide. So one chunk of that decision was when I wanted to go see the Gobi Desert. So I took a bus for 17 hours by myself into the Gobi Desert, got off the bus, and just started to walk. So I walked for 2 days into the desert by myself, camped, and then walked out, grabbed the bus back. So that was the only kind of like, this is what your first day, 2 days of an expedition might be like. But there's like, they did it for 6 months. They walked the whole way across the Gobi Desert in October or November.
Yeah, so I really can't compare. One time I walked on the Great Wall of China, which I'll tell you later. I had to sneak on it, and I camped up there for a long weekend by myself, in one of the old, what were they called? Signal towers, where a soldier, like from Mulan, where when the Huns are trying to cross, they light up the signal tower, and then it lets the other soldiers know, and they light all the signal towers all the way down the wall to let them know that they're being invaded. So that was tricky. I had to sneak up there, and that was a lot of walking, and it was all by myself. But I kind of like that. I like being by myself. And I don't know if I'm built for that kind of an expedition like they did. Like, I'm also reading Wild by Cheryl Strayed right now. I don't know if you've heard of the movie or read the book already, but I encourage you to do either. Go to your bookstore and get the book Wild by Cheryl Strayed, or you can maybe rent the movie. But I haven't seen the movie yet. I want to finish the book first. But it's about this girl who I don't know how old she was when she started, but she kind of almost midlife crisis type thing, or quarter life crisis. I think she was in her late 20s when she did it. And she went to hike the Pacific Coast Trail by herself. And it's really interesting. And reading it, like how she prepared for it and kind of like her backstory before she began, and that she's doing it as a single female, I was like, eh. If she's kind of doing it, and she kind of is like derpa derpa in the setup of it, like kind of haphazard, not really like she read guidebooks and did her kind of research on it. But if you read it, you can see like at the beginning that she just doesn't really seem like she's cut out for it. So, which gives me confidence because I think that I'm maybe a step above her, not by much, but I feel like if she can do it, I can do it. So yeah, I'm reading a lot of books like that. I read a book recently about a lady who walked across the Gobi Desert by herself. If you have Netflix, there's a movie called Tracks, that I highly recommend. I watched it with a friend a little while ago. It was amazing. Like it, I think it's kind of what sparked my itch, or maybe made the itch worse recently, is watching that movie. So it's called Tracks. It's about this girl who in the 1970s, I forget how old she was when she started, which is a reoccurring theme. I really should pay more attention to how old people are when they start these trips. She in the 1970s in Australia, she wants to walk to the Indian Ocean. So she wants to walk more than halfway across Australia, because I think she starts somewhere in the middle. Or maybe just past the West Coast. She wants to walk all the way across Australia. I think it takes her about 8 months, and she has three camels with her and her dog. And basically, when she first started, she needed a little bit of sponsorship. Somebody recommended getting National Geographic to sponsor her. They did after she wrote in. And the deal was that she would have to have a photographer meet her every couple weeks, to take photographs, keep up to date on her. And she agreed to that, not very willingly, but she agreed. And anyway, after the trip was over, she completed it successfully. She wrote an article to accompany the photographs that he had taken during the trip. And then after that article was released, it had really good reviews. So she then wrote a book called Tracks about this trip. So I ordered Tracks as well so I could read it, because the movie was unbelievable. So if you have Netflix, please watch Tracks, and you can kind of see what's kind of like, I don't know. What's giving me all the tingles about my next trip? I told my mom and dad to watch it, and kind of what it was about, and they were like, "Oh, that's what you're excited about doing, or like what?" And because dad had already read The Cycling Home from Siberia, mom knows what it's about, so they kind of understand this solo walk, like expedition type thing. They're used to me traveling by myself, but usually it's in more public areas. So I'm not really by myself. I meet people, I'm couch surfing, I stay with people during the trip. But this, what I'm kind of thinking of for my next trip, is a little bit more remote, kind of camping every night by myself, having to plan how much water I take and where I can refill my water jugs next. How much weight can I carry on my back at a time? How many kilometers can I walk in a day? Those are the kind of things that are going through my mind right now that I'm spending some time researching, and thinking like, is this something I could actually do? Am I fit enough to do it? I have a bad knee, which sounds very old of me, but it runs in my family. My left knee is really bad, so I don't know if walking long term is something that physically I could do, because it takes a huge toll on your body. Like when you think about it, yeah, I know how to walk. I can walk for a while, but when you're walking for 8 hours a day for months at a time, that just like that is unreal. The wear it takes on your body is quite profound. So yeah, and how do I train? Like I live in Vancouver. I can't, where am I gonna walk 8 kilometers a day? Well, actually that's a lie. It's very easy to walk 8 kilometers in a day, but I don't know. It definitely have to be something that I put a lot more research and time preparing into than I have in my past trips, because they were kind of seat of the pants, and this would be a very, very planned out trip, which I've never done before, so that's kind of exciting. Yeah, so that was episode one. I haven't come up with a name for the podcast yet, so maybe I'll greet you with the title in the next episode. But we'll pick up kind of where I left off. Going to Italy with Shellnut. And I will include some more frequently asked questions, that kind of stuff about my trips at the end of that podcast as well. So I hope you enjoyed it. And I look forward to speaking to you next week. Bye.